Now I am here with my good buddy, Greg Conley. He is the founder of Trifecta Nutrition. He is a guy that I was fortunate enough to invest into a few years back, and now his company is blowing up. Welcome to the podcast one more time, Greg.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me. I like to say we've blown up at this point.
What did I call it?
Blowing up.
Oh, blowing up. Oh, gotcha. Okay, so he's already blown. They actually have. And, you know, lucky for me, I guess I'm a good picker in people, because you and I have become buddies, and then I've seen the way that you've helped a lot of our mutual friends as well. So you're one of those people that I think gives more than they take from a friendship, and so I guess thank you. And
Absolutely.
I feel lucky to be a friend and to be an investor for sure in Trifecta. But I mean, today I want to tell, you know, our viewership, our listenership, about how you built the business and where you come from. But I hope to do a little bit of a unique thing today and maybe take a deep dive into your expertise in the world of marketing. You know more about marketing than probably anybody that I know. And here I am here trying to build out Haney Biz and the Mark Haney Show. And we've been really doing it sort of with, you know, people who try really hard but don't have this deep expertise that you have. So today I kind of want to, we might even use me a little bit as a guinea pig or some other people that we know is sort of a subject matter, and then you add your expertise to it.
Yeah.
Is that
absolutely
cool?
No, would love that. I'm all about people having directly actionable takeaways from any speech I give or podcast or radio show, et cetera.
Okay, cool. Why don't we start at the launch of Trifecta, a strategy around launching the company. Did it go like you expected?
I mean, candidly, it went better than we were originally anticipated. We knew we were doing a lot of the things right, but anytime you're launching a business, you know, you have limited resources. We did come into it with, you know, some money from previous exits, but it was, you know, not a lot. I've had some business failures as well, you know, absolutely. And going into it, we really wanted to, you know, prove out the minimum viable product. That's always kind of a big focus of mine, is make sure you have a business before you put a bunch of money and resources and investor money, you know, really into it. But with Trifecta, yeah, we took the website live exactly 4 years ago, so August of 2015. And the first month, I think we brought in, you know, like $2,500 or something.
Okay.
It was some revenue in month one, which was exciting.
And this is an organic food delivery company,
yes,
right? So you have great organic food,
and
now you're bringing that to the world.
100%. Okay. So it's an entirely e-commerce play. We refuse to sell in any stores. We only sell through the internet so we can keep our margins up. But yes, we ship fully prepared, you know, fully cooked organic meals to all 50 states. So that's really kind of the main business. Since then, we've acquired an app company and have, you know, some digital products, and, you know, we've kind of built ancillary products around the core business. But the food delivery service still brings in, you know, over 99% of the company-wide revenue. It's really the big 200-pound gorilla. So, you know, quick backstory for me on people. I really learned a lot about marketing and scalability in, you know, Silicon Valley. I lived in the San Francisco Bay Area for 10 years, and a big focus there, obviously, with all the venture capital, et cetera, is deconstructing how to take a company from a small scale and just the founders and a few employees to huge scale very quickly. And I quickly discovered that it's incredibly difficult to do that without a solid marketing engine. Marketing is able to sell people faster than salespeople ever can. Mm-hmm. And I was actually talking to a CEO that I do a little consulting for recently, and she essentially, you know, has a services business, you know, where she you know, sells HR services to other businesses. And I took the deal volume that we did in the last month. We brought on about 5,000 new active customers last month, and did the quick back of the napkin math. For you to bring that on with salespeople, you would need 250 salespeople closing a new business every single day all 30 days. So,
yeah.
And I did that with a website. So
well, can I challenge you on that a little bit?
Sure.
You've got somebody in the B2B space and services, and you're talking about creating a marketing engine. Your product is going to the consumer, or her product or his product. They're going to a business. Mm-hmm. Does it work just as well when you're going to in a B2B play?
Yes. So early stage B2B, you generally focus on leads. You know, the big challenge early stage B2B is you want to get in with other businesses. So you're focused on creating something on your website that's going to get people to give you their contact information. And since I know we're going to talk a lot about, you know, inbound marketing, which is kind of the, you know, industry jargon name for it, the term for that is something called a lead magnet. So, you know, in this case, since it's an HR business, the lead magnet may, you know, maybe something like an employee, you know, the ultimate employee handbook for California, or, you know, full set of onboarding documents, you know, vetted by, you know, an employee, employment law lawyer or something like that.
Right. Some people call this clickbait. I've heard stuff like that. I mean, are those names interchangeable?
Well, not necessarily. Okay. You want it to have some sort of title that is going to interest people, which is kind of the clickbait term for it.
Okay.
But you want it to actually generate high quality leads. So let's say it's the employee handbook. You're not going to give it to them just because they clicked on a link. They have to actually give you their contact info, you know, name, in B2B, you probably want a phone number and an email as well. And then you're going to email them the ebook, and you're going to set up an automation. So when someone enters their contact information, your email system automatically sends them the ebook. We do that on our website. Mm-hmm. We'll have diet guides, for example. So how to become a vegan, or top 10 paleo recipes, or how to lose, you know, 20 pounds in 60 days, or, you know, we have a whole bunch of them at this point. And they generate a huge amount of leads for us, which we eventually try and nurture into customers using email automations or email drip sequences or whatever you want to call them. We have an email system that if you download my How to Lose Weight Fast ebook, you're going to get a follow-up email the next day and the day after that and the day after that. And those emails are going to slowly going to try and nurture you into buying my core product, which is the food, essentially. You know, that's my big profit maximizer. So as you get bigger, you can target different verticals. You know, maybe you're not a vegan, so you want to eat meat. So I'm going to make sure I'm selling paleo or something else to you in that nurture track. But in the beginning, the main focus on the B2B side of the fence is get leads. And then eventually what companies do with B2B is they give people free trials of their product. They'll say, oh, we'll give you free services for 10 days, or we'll give you a free consultation, or, you know, something like that. That's getting, you know, getting the foot in the door. Exactly. And then eventually you can convert that to the website as just bringing you contracts.
Well, thinking about, you know, you launched this business, you had, you were capitalized to some extent, right? You went out and, raise money at the beginning?
In the beginning, we just put the money directly in. It was largely my co-founder and sister had been through the Demandforce exit, my buddy Sam's company. So she put about $100,000 into the company.
Okay. So you had capitalization at some point. You had your background knowledge. But I can imagine a lot of us are sitting out here going, okay, wait a minute. I'm getting into this, and I need to build this marketing engine. I have to deconstruct how to build a big company, but yet you've got to start
very
small because you don't have any money.
Yep. So in the beginning, it's get a website up, even if it's only 3 or 4 pages. Some people start with a single page website. You know, it's just a landing page website. Then they'll build a lead magnet, which, you know, you can go on to the website's called Theme Forest, but they have sub websites called like Graphics River and Audio Jungle and stuff like that. And you can buy an ebook template for like $15. It's practically free. And then you just fill it out yourself with whatever.
You write a little quick ebook. You make the ebook.
Exactly. You write a little quick ebook. Maybe it's a 20, 30 pager or something. Something that's going to bring actual value and will maybe take someone smart like you to write, you know, a day or two, you know, type thing.
I'll get Monique to help me. Is that okay?
Yeah. We got Monique in the back.
Brown in the background there. She's my boss, basically. So
you know, have someone who's a subject matter expert write an ebook on, you know, in your case, maybe entrepreneurship, and then that is going to generate a lead. So now all of a sudden you're collecting someone's email, their name, maybe their phone number, maybe you're selling them consulting services or more digital products or a whole bunch of things. But
so you can do it on the cheap. You're talking about like a little toolkit to write a quick book that costs you almost nothing.
Yep.
And what about like the quality of the website? I mean, go out and build a website, you can spend 10 or 20 grand or I guess or a lot more. Or you can go get a WordPress site or, you know, one of the Weebly or who knows, whatever.
Totally. So I always recommend people start with WordPress. It's so big that it's probably 50% of the internet is now WordPress sites. But there are little kind of upgrades you can buy for WordPress is free, but you can buy little upgrades. Like originally we used one called Aveda. It's A-V-A-D-A. And it's also for sale on ThemeForest, that website I was telling you about.
ThemeForest.
I think it's $100 or
something. Make a note of it. ThemeForest, Monique.
Yeah, it's a huge resource website. But yeah, Aveda, I think we paid $100 for. There's other ones now that may be even better, like Elementor, et cetera. But they require no coding. You can literally drag and drop elements and have a gorgeous website within literally a matter of a couple weeks. Even doing it yourself if you're an individual entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. So getting that website set up, and then there's very easy tools to start with. So for the emails, we started with MailChimp, which is free up to the first 2,000 email subscribers. So you're literally starting with free. Then we used Optin Monster to create the little, you know, pop-up in the bottom left corner that has the lead magnet in it. That was like $30 a month or something like that. You know, again, practically free. All the tools we started with to build the website, we probably spent a couple $100.
Wow. Like, so you had this background though. When did you decide, hey, I have to bring in some experts?
When you start, so you want to spend the minimum amount of money to figure out if this whole thing works in the first place. And then from there, you know, as it starts to scale and you have, you know, a little bit of extra revenue, at that point you're like, okay, it's going to be useful for me to have subject matter experts in specific areas.
Oh, okay. So you didn't bring in the experts until you got it cranking a little bit.
No, but I mean, in some cases, if I had known someone like an Anthony, who is a buddy of mine who owns a company called Launch Titans, if I had known someone like him, I mean, he'll build a full funnel website, et cetera, for like $10,000, you know, very, very inexpensive. So I may have gone that route in the beginning.
Knowing what you know now.
Knowing what I know now. Yeah. But, you know, ultimately, if you are, you know, my first company, I started in college and I had negative money in my bank account. So if you really have no money, there's ways to get almost all of it accomplished for free with some elbow grease and hard work.
But is there, so you learned it somewhat through, well, school hard knocks, but also just being in the trenches and learning it. You've made yourself an expert in this realm. But for the people that maybe aren't going to be so quick of a study, right? So would you recommend bringing in someone like Anthony or another expert early on? And then I'm kind of wondering, like, how do you know who to trust? Because most of the people under 30 know more about SEO and, you know, the different social media platforms and podcasts than anybody over 50.
Yeah, I think having certain subject matter experts in certain areas are critical. Like someone like, you know, using Anthony as the example, he knows all of inbound digital marketing very well. And honestly, one of the most valuable things I get out of him is if I need a subject matter expert on, let's say, Facebook advertising or something, he'll know the top three guys in the country. And he'll be able to refer them out. I can, you know, interview all three of them and end up, you know, deciding on an agency I want to go with for that. Or if I need a search engine optimization guy, he'll have a few great referrals for me. So people that live and breathe the digital marketing ecosystem are incredible resources. Like for you, I'll use you as an example.
Yeah.
So you're, in deep in the entrepreneurship ecosystem, if I asked you, oh, can you refer me to a great law firm or a great HR firm or some great banks? I use, yes. You know, we use you guys for your bookkeeping service, and I asked them for referrals to three great banks, and they immediately, boom, responded back with three top banks, all the contact info, which president or senior vice president I need to talk to really do things, because you're a subject matter expert in entrepreneurship. So there's a lot of additional value that comes from being connected early on and not kind of siloing yourself off, which a lot of people tend to do a little bit too much of.
Well, I don't want to talk about Anthony too much because he's going to get too busy. He won't have time to help me or you. So, okay. So that's all the talking about Anthony that we can do for the show. Is that okay?
Okay. I'm fine with that.
All right, good. So, okay. So, you know, let's stay on the marketing front. I was going to originally talk about, hey, how did you decide to, you know, all the growth challenges and funding that growth and stuff. But let's stay on the marketing front for a little bit. So so you get your website built. You get the basics done. You've got a product. Walk us through this. Okay, inbound marketing, right? Yeah, it's, I mean, I read the book probably two or three times, but digesting it is difficult. Help me digest that inbound marketing strategy.
So it really comes in just a few key stages. And one of the things I do want to make sure I point out is you saying get the website built, the website will never be finished getting built. It is a project that will go on until the end of time. You're always going to be adding more landing pages, more blog posts, improving even the homepage or, you know, certain things on it. It's a never-ending project. So always think of it as iteration to improve your leads conversions, or in us, our full-blown customer
conversions. Did you change partway through where maybe you start off on a WordPress and then decide, oh gosh, I need a lot more features, I'm going to go some custom format?
Yes, we're in the process of, our WordPress is now hosted on Amazon Web Services, so we have these big mega servers because we get 500,000 monthly unique visitors now. So it's a huge amount of traffic.
Wow.
But the fact that we are on Amazon Web Services, we're actually going to move to Magento, which is like a huge e-commerce platform that Nike and Starbucks and people like that use just because our volume is so big. But WordPress, great to start, and you can, you know, really build a business on it. But other piece of that question was, you know, what are the steps of the inbound marketing funnel? And for us, it's really starting with, not for us, for everybody, it's starting with a traffic source. So the most important thing in the beginning is, okay, I set up a website. How the F do I get people to the website? And that is a mistake a lot of people, including myself, make. I made this on a previous business, is they go, oh, well, I need to set up a Facebook, an Instagram, a YouTube, you know, a blog, a Pinterest, you know, all these different things. And they're doing all of them a little bit and none of them well.
They've diluted their resources or effort.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly right. They have very limited time and resources in the beginning, and they end up spreading them so thin because they just want a presence everywhere. So I think you should set them all up, but then pick one that makes logical sense for your business. So, you know, I've pushed, you know, we're going to use you as the guinea pig again.
Great.
I pushed you and Brian, et cetera, really hard on the YouTube side of the fence because it's a huge search engine. I think you do amazingly well on camera. You're an animated dude. You're great at talking on the mic, et cetera. You'd be amazing on YouTube. And, you know, I would pick a particular platform like that and focus a huge amount of your effort on it. Now, when you're big, like Gary Vee or Tony Robbins or somebody like that, eventually you can be on all platforms and, you know, you really want to reach people in all these different channels, essentially. But in the beginning, you really want to pick whatever channel is the most effective for you. And for us, that was Instagram. We built up an Instagram following, you know, in the beginning, it was really just by following and unfollowing people that followed competitors of ours, as well as athletes we worked with. And then we got into influencer marketing, where we'd start with small-time athletes that have 20 or 50,000 followers, then get to like medium size that have 100 or 200,000 and have them posting about us. Then, you know, now we're working with full-blown celebrities that have 10 million plus followers on Instagram.
Well, let's walk, I know your business, but let's walk our listenership through your business. So you got these influencer marketing people, and they get on and talk about how great Trifecta is, or what happens. How do they actually drive business to you?
again, that comes down to a lot of the details. So there are different types of Instagram posts that do different things. If I want, if I have someone that has a million followers and I want to get a lot of followers from them, I'll have them do a giveaway. I'll say, hey, go on your Instagram, give away $1,000 worth of Trifecta food for free to one of your fans. But tell your fans in that post, I don't write it, but Shannon on our team writes it. We write, you know, in order to, you know, they'll say, hey, you know, giveaway alert or whatever they want to say, you know I talk about my nutrition and my six pack all the time. Here's your chance to try it yourself. I'm giving away $1,000 worth of free Trifecta food. And then it'll say, to enter, follow these three steps. And step one will be follow, you know, Shannon Sharp did one recently from Fox Sports Undisputed. Mm-hmm. He'll say, follow Shannon Sharp and Trifecta. Then he'll say, tag two friends. So that's what's going to make it go viral.
Yeah.
In the comments. And then, you know, say something about what your nutrition goal is or something like that in the comments as well. So all of a sudden this post, you know, I could look at it right now on my phone. The post got something like 60,000 likes and had something like 14,000 comments. So,
Well,
let me finish the story.
Yeah.
With that, all of those people went through and followed those steps. So in a 24-hour period, we gained 10,000 new followers from Shannon Sharp. So, you know, a lot of people are just trying to get to 10,000 followers in the first place. This allowed us in a 24-hour period to gather a huge amount of followers. So that's just an example of one tactic to be able that brands use to be able to gain followers on Instagram. And you can do the same thing on YouTube. You know, you can do a YouTube collaboration with another, you know, celebrity entrepreneur like Damon John, and then have him post about your show on his YouTube with a link to subscribe to your show in the description. All of a sudden, thousands of people come from his show onto your show.
Would you rather have audience growth or sales growth? Because, I mean, you have to just... So which, I mean, how do you decide how to allocate those resources?
If you look at Facebook's overall strategy, it's always content first and then sales second. Content is what ultimately gets people engaged for you to be able to sell to them.
Yeah.
So I do think content is probably the most important, but for most early stage entrepreneurs, I mean, you got to pay rent or your mortgage or, you know, whatever, you got to buy food, all that type of stuff. You got to bring in money. So, you know,
you're spending money, you're using your resources just to get more Instagram followers. So a certain portion of your marketing budget is like, hey, audience growth. And a certain part is make the cash register ring.
100%. So for that post, I'm feeding Shannon Sharp for free. So that cost me maybe $700 a month. And then he just gave away $1,000 worth of free food, you know? So that's, you know, cost of goods sold. Maybe that cost me $650 or something like that. So there is a cost associated to that, but now those people permanently follow us and I can market to them again and again and again every single day because I'm now in their phone telling them about Trifecta continuously. And on our profile, we of course have a link in our bio that goes right to our homepage. And now those people are going to slowly convert over time.
Okay, this is helpful for me. So you would rather, it sounds like, maybe I'm putting words in your mouth, but so in this case, you're gaining the follower, and then now they're in the funnel, right? You grab them, and now it's bing, 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 bing. How do I attack you to get some business? Do you ever use a Shannon Sharp or, you know, you and I are buddies with Uriah Faber. I know he's a partner with you and you guys do a podcast, but I'm throwing out names that other people might know, but do you ever use them just to make the cash register ring? Like just Uriah say, hey, go buy this, click here. And it takes a link to buying a Trifecta product.
So this is some of the Jeff Rizzo secret sauce that I probably shouldn't give away, but we'll give it away anyway. Generally, no.
Okay.
That is going to happen organically. People are going to come and see Shannon Sharp talking about the food. So they'll go, oh, what's this brand? And they'll come to our page and follow us. And then they'll click the link in our bio. And then they'll see the little lead magnet pop up. And they'll go, oh, okay, you know, I do kind of want a weight loss guide so I can look like Shannon Sharp. Maybe it's one specific to him, you know, in that case. So they'll download that. And then they're going further and further down the funnel. And some of them will convert. You know, if we get 10,000 new followers, probably 30 or 40 people are going to convert that day from that post.
Okay.
The reason we don't do it is because it actually hurts the brand and the influencer's audience.
Yeah.
People don't want to be sold to. They want advice and they want tips and tricks and stuff like that, but they don't want Shannon Sharp on there going, go to the Trifecta website and buy this food. Right. That may work the first couple times.
But it devalues his message.
Exactly.
Eventually, in the future, yeah.
You know, if I was on your radio show, I'm drinking a sparkling ice right now, and I said, hey, everybody go buy a sparkling ice. People are not interested in me just directly promoting a product.
Okay.
They don't want to be sold to. If I tell them, hey, I lost a lot of weight by drinking zero-calorie sparkling ice, now all of a sudden I'm giving them a tip. Mm-hmm. That really is a key to keeping the influencers' engagement up.
Right.
Because it's something we look at when we look at influencers. If they have a big following and very small engagement on their posts, and what I mean by engagement is they're not getting a lot of likes and comments for the size of their following. And there's easy tools. You can search Instagram engagement calculator and just throw someone's name and it'll give you a percentage.
Okay.
Usually we're looking for people with 3 to 6% engagement, but sometimes we'll see people with 10 million followers and they'll have like 1% engagement. And that means they've sold too much.
They've sold out.
They've become they've become a billboard for products. Maybe they have 5, 6, 10 brands they're working with. And the brand message is really hard to come across because they're selling everything they touch. They're
right.
They're on this show going, hey, this microphone's amazing, this sparkling ice, these chairs, everything they touch, they're trying to sell it to their audience. And eventually they become a commercial and they're no longer engaging for their audience. They're just an advertisement. And we see tons of advertisements all day and we just blank them out.
So there's tools that you can use to determine the difference between a guy that's a sellout and a guy that's more authentic.
100%. Yeah. We use Iconosquare is one of the pieces of software we use for Instagram, and it will directly show we have it set up. We have like a pro version that shows our engagement as a brand compared to all the other brands in our space.
Mm-hmm.
And this is another secret sauce, thing. If you advertise too much compared to organic influencers promoting you, you will dilute your own engagement. And if you look at other brands in our space, we have good engagement for a brand, about 1.5% to 1.75%, which is good for a brand. Our competitors have like 0.1%. They'll have like a tenth of a percent engagement or 0.2%. And it's because they've advertised to get all of their fans. Their fans aren't actually engaged and connected with the brand. They're just there because they saw an ad and clicked and never came back and looked again.
Well, I follow Trifecta on Instagram, right? So I'm following this business because I have I have an interest in it because of you and because of the investment and because all that, and I want to learn. Mm-hmm. But so we all know the Gary V jab, 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 right hook. Mm-hmm. So what's the jabbing look like for you on building your Instagram following?
It's something we started doing a lot more this year. Initially, it was like the aspirational stuff, like advice from celebrities and celebrity athletes. And to give people context, I know what the fuck I'm talking about. We have 180,000 followers on Instagram.
And for our AM listeners, I'm going to have Brian use the delete button. FM 105.5. If you're ever up on a Sunday morning, you're not at church, you can listen to me on Money 105.5. But Brian, make sure we delete that before. You can cuss all you want. I don't care. But I just make sure Brian doesn't fall asleep at the wheel or I get a $10,000 fine.
He's giving me the thumbs up. I'll pay the fine. If we can't get rid of it. So people know that I know what I'm talking about. We've got 180,000 followers on Instagram, and we gain somewhere around 100,000 followers a year at our current pace. So it's scaled as we've gotten bigger. We're a verified brand, meaning we have that fancy blue check, meaning we're a famous brand next to it. And right now, the jab, jab, jab we're doing is in 2019, we started doing these little educational posts. So we'll compare maybe the calories in alcoholic beverages or the amount of protein in different types of meat. There's different amounts of protein in chicken and steak and bison and everything. Or we'll, have aspirational quotes that give people direct advice about their dieting.
And you use celebrities to do that, or people who have that are known to do that. Because I know that the people, when I follow your Instagram, right? So I do think you should follow Greg on Instagram, because the posts usually show somebody who's in really good shape, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, wow, it makes you want to pause for a second. That person's mm-hmm. in great shape.
Yeah, 100%. So we do it with them, and they'll have kind of some advice of what they're doing to stay in such great shape. But we also do these full graphics that, you know, going back to Shannon, our social media team lead, she literally does the graphics in Photoshop, and it'll be an actual comparison of the different proteins. And people will, if you look at insights on Instagram, you can see a post of a really attractive athlete with great abs will get maybe 250, 300 saves. So it's that little kind of, it looks like a bookmark, saves. The educational posts will get like 3,500 saves. So you know people are getting value from it because they went onto Instagram and they went, wow, I'm going to use this later. And they saved it to their saved items. So we do want to make sure we are establishing ourselves as a thought leader on nutrition and fitness and creating that value-adding content, which you could easily do on the entrepreneurship side of the fence. I mean, you're just a wealth of business knowledge. But those little nuggets of content, even more than a quote or an athlete with amazing abs, tend to be our highest engaged posts.
Okay.
And Instagram is a very visual platform. I mean, obviously we want it to be on brand. It uses our brand colors. It's very aesthetically well designed, so it looks good on Instagram. But ultimately, yeah, that's how we're giving value back at the top of the funnel, which leads people to our website. And then,
but the education piece on Instagram works. It's not just entertainment or cool pictures and stuff. I didn't realize education was so, it works so well on Instagram.
It's actually the highest engaged thing across all platforms. So if you look at the Instagrammers that have huge amounts of engagement, they're constantly putting out like let's say a workout video that's focusing on how to perfect your squats, or they'll do five videos of five different leg workouts in the same post, and you'll see the post, and of course it's them with great abs and, you know, workout outfit, but then it'll say, you know, leg training, day or something like that, and then each one of the videos will show a different leg workout, and people will save that post by the tens of thousands so they can come back when they're at the gym and look at each one of those leg training workouts. So giving Instagram's very fast, so it has to be like bite-sized nuggets of information compared to YouTube, where we could put this whole podcast we're doing on YouTube and, you know, ultimately it could be 45 minutes long, an hour long, and people will sit down with their breakfast in the morning on Sunday and sip a cup of coffee while they watch a whole, you know, Mark Haney podcast. I've done it myself. And it's
addicting, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. If you're getting a lot of value, people will sit down.
I just got to get a little bit bigger audience than me and you and my wife. That's my only challenge. Okay. So let's get into the, is it okay if we get into the,
sure.
Once you get in the funnel, right? So you got captured, you're an audience member. Now it's time to figure out a way to convert you to the next level, right? So what does that look like?
So it's largely a numbers game. So, you know, I talked a little bit about how we have seven or eight different lead magnets now. We bring in 7,500 new emails a week.
Okay.
So it's a huge amount of volume of people that are downloading those lead magnets.
And so the email is of ultra value.
The email is still the most valuable
thing. What's an email worth to you? A good one. Like, you know, something where somebody has clicked on it and it means something.
Probably, $1.50 a lead.
Okay.
Yeah, something like that. And
on a B2B person, it might be worth $5.
Yeah, potentially even more. So email is so valuable. The reason email is so valuable to this day, even though marketers have just spammed the living, you know, bleep out of it, is because you have control over it. Mark Zuckerberg could take my Instagram away at any time. It seems like I own Instagram, but he's determining how many people see my posts. He's determining, you know, if they're relevant or not, you know, all kinds of different things using his algorithm. Yeah.
So you own your website and you own your email for
list.
Sure.
Exactly. Yeah. And if I want to send an email to every person on my list, you know, which is over 500,000 people at this point, our whole list, you know, if we took even unengaged people is over 2 million, I can do that. I have that power. I cannot, you know, send an Instagram post to all 180,000 of my Instagram followers because Instagram shows it to 3.4% of my current audience.
Okay.
So it's all about control with email, and email is much more engaging as well if someone opens it. On Instagram, I may scroll past a whole bunch of posts as I'm scrolling down. On email, I'm actually opening the email and, you know, at least briefly reading it before I delete it or go on to the next email or take action and come to the website. So that's why email is so incredibly valuable. So people have come to the website, they've downloaded the lead magnet, they're now in my email list, and now I've gone into MailChimp and, you know, built out an email automation. And a great resource for people, because I love giving resources, is to go to digitalmarketer.com and read the Email Marketing Machine article. It's literally called that, the Email Marketing Machine.
Okay.
And they show you for your first automation the steps you should take. And the first email, first you give them the thing that they wanted. So you give them the lead magnet, for which for us is ebooks or, you know, stuff like that. Then the next email, which will usually come either same time or, you know, 12 hours later or something like that, next day, is what's called an indoctrination email, which is, you know, for you, you're super likable guy, you're a family man, you own all these businesses, you're, you know, the tip of the spear for entrepreneurship in Sacramento. It's indoctrinating them on who Mark Haney is, so they fall in love with you and fall in love with the brand and feel some connection to the brand. You're not just one of the thousands and thousands of other brands out there interacting with them. Then from the you know, that's the indoctrination email. Then it goes to usually something that's trying to get them to buy some very inexpensive product. That's, you know, called a tripwire email.
Okay.
So that may be another ebook that's even more robust, but it's $4.99.
Okay.
You know, it's still cheap. It's only $5, but now you're having a second transaction with them. The first transaction was the ebook for their email.
Okay. So so maybe I ask why. Okay. So I get the ebook, the free one, gets them into your email marketing campaign, gets them into the funnel. But why sell a $4.99 product versus a $500 product or $5,000 product? Let's say, hey, well, I have a bookkeeping service, right? We all know that. I could go straight for the $500 a month.
Sure, because
why wouldn't I?
You're trying to kind of ease them into the process of feeling more comfortable with you. Now they've given you credit card information.
You don't want them to unsubscribe or something.
Exactly.
They're more likely to unsubscribe on a $500 bookkeeping product than a a little book.
Yeah, and it's a big commitment. You know, maybe they want to learn the basics of bookkeeping or something like that.
Oh,
so
okay.
You know, you're giving them something it's going to kind of sell them on why they should use your service, but at the same time, you're going to give them a lot of value. I mean, they just paid $5 of their hard-earned money for whatever that particular asset is.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, you know, again, you're moving them to.
But you're giving
them
a great
product.
Deal on something, really.
Yes,
it's worth more than $5.
100%.
Yeah, okay.
You know, it's probably worth $30 or $50 bucks or something like that. But you're just kind of moving, and I don't need to, you know, reiterate the whole article. People should definitely go read it several times. But you're just moving them through this process.
And they're falling in love with you along this way.
Yes, they're getting familiar with you, familiar with the brand, you know, et cetera, familiar with your different services. I mean, you have a lot of different services here that you guys offer. And, you know, you want to be offering them things that make sense for whatever, you know, particular category they're coming from.
Right.
So if they downloaded a bookkeeping ebook, you probably don't want to sell them construction services.
Okay.
You know, you want to keep them in whatever channel that they were in, you know, at that point going forward. And eventually you're going to segment that out into even deeper channels. So say someone downloads my ebook, I very quickly, after I've indoctrinated them, I'm sending them a segmenting email as my second email that's like, hey, what type of diet do you like?
Oh,
you know,
okay.
Are you a vegan? Are you into paleo? You know, whatever it is. Because it's really bad for me to send a vegan into a paleo email track because they're like, you know, you're killing animals and, you know, if I hate you guys, et cetera, et cetera. It would be a disaster.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. But if I put them in a vegan email track, you know, then maybe they're super interested in it. They're going to engage still. They downloaded a vegan ebook. I'm speaking their language to them.
And do you do you test, right? Versus sending it to your whole list. You've perfected this by doing what A/B testing and things like that. I mean,
yes. And in the beginning, you don't have time really. Okay. You know, if you're just starting off, you're just, you know, you're just cruising down the freeway, hitting as many cars as you possibly can, trying to, you know, trying to get one to crash. You know, it's not, you don't have,
I like that metaphor.
Yeah. You don't have, the time to set up A/B testing software or anything like that. Yeah. But there's tons of free ones like Google Optimize and stuff that will eventually let you do that. And we've started getting a lot more into that now. But in the beginning, you're very much so like, let's get a funnel that's taking people from, I don't know who Trifecta is, to I am buying Trifecta's service. Mm-hmm. And if you're missing any stage of it, if you're missing the traffic source, the lead magnet, the email automations, the conversion, you know, process on your website, if you're missing any stage, it's like you can have a Ferrari, but it has no tires on it. It's not going to drive. You know, that is absolutely critical. You have to have every single stage of the process. In so many businesses, I talk to celebrities that are making $20 million a year in the movies, and then I go to their website and they don't have a lead magnet. I'm like, they're like, well, I have 10 million followers on Instagram. Why do I have 1,000 people on my email list? I'm like, how are they getting on your email list? And, you know, it's like a sign up for our newsletter at the bottom of the page or something. Nobody wants to sign up for your newsletter. They want to give you their email for something valuable. It doesn't matter if you're Mark Wahlberg or not.
Besides an ebook, like what else do people give away that would be like valuable?
Video series, actual books, you know, pretty much anything that is the best possible lead magnets are the ones that are free for you to clone. That's why ebooks and video series and guides and stuff like that.
So you make something, might cost you something to make it, but then from there, you give away a lot.
Yeah, I can copy an ebook. I give away 7,500 ebooks a week, you know, but it's free for me to clone it an unlimited number of times.
Okay.
It's just a PDF, you know, right. I can fire it off, you know, as many times as I need to.
And then the next step where you're selling the $4.99 book or whatever that product is, make sure it costs you less than $4.99. Otherwise, you could run yourself
100%. You probably want it to be a digital product again.
Okay.
And you probably want it to be, you know, close to free. Like, we'll use digitalmarketer.com itself as an example. So I've now referred to two of their articles. One, the CVO article in the speech that I gave here with Uriah a couple weeks ago, and now the email marketing machine. Those are top-of-the-funnel assets that digitalmarketer.com has created that are super valuable because they know people like me will refer people to them, other entrepreneurs.
Right.
Then when you come to their website, they're going to try and get your email and you know, through some ebook or video series or whatever. Once you're in their email, they're going to go through their own process that they just explained to you and try and get you to buy one of their video series guides. That's the whole thing they sell. Is their CEO, Ryan Dice, who's literally a Mark Haney, is sitting in front of a camera doing a video series explaining digital marketing or explaining how to build an audience on Instagram or explaining how to do email marketing. And those video series are like $1,000 each. So that's their core product.
Okay.
But it's a video series. So he can clone it a billion times and it doesn't cost him a penny. You know, maybe a little bit of server time if he has a bunch of people watching him at the same time, but it's practically free.
Good problems, right?
Yeah, it's practically free, and people are paying, you know, you can get discounts on it and stuff through different emails, but people are paying, you know, $50 to, $1,500 depending on the video series to watch them. And that's all he does is every week he creates a new video series on a new topic about entrepreneurship and digital marketing and releases it on the website. Or he'll bring in subject matter experts to talk about it. And the whole revenue model, they're a $100 million a year company. The whole revenue model is based on getting people to the website, educating them on digital marketing, and then selling them these video series. Hmm. It's literally that simple. And that's honestly, if I took over your company tomorrow, that's what I would try and say.
Monique, you got that? Okay, yeah. Monique's taking notes. So if it doesn't work,
you can blame it on me, Monique.
Yeah.
I got you covered.
Perfect.
So, you know, that's a great example of everything he's selling is entirely digital. It's no cost. He's selling education on entrepreneurship and digital marketing. Mm-hmm. And there's a myriad of people out there doing it. I mean, people are subject matter experts in different industries or, you know, different subjects. Like for me, I'm a marketing nerd. But, you know, really making sure that you are, you know, you're having a core product that you can sell through the website is a, something I'm a big believer in, because then that's where the fun starts. Then people are just coming to your website and converting, and you never had to talk to them. A machine is doing all of the work.
Yeah, I've been with you out somewhere, and you're looking at your phone, and you're seeing metrics start showing up on your phone. Of like, and I think it almost looks like a cash register or an adding machine going. And it's like, okay, and we're hanging out with Uriah, and you're watching your cash register go off.
Yes,
it's fun to watch. I mean, it's fun to see somebody do that.
Yeah, I'll pull it up on my phone right now so people can check it out. But it is, I use various different dashboards. For me, I my favorite is one called Gecko Board, and it allows me to create different tiles of different metrics for the business. So I'll pull it up right now so, you know, the people with the video can see what it looks like on you know, my phone.
Does it tie into your accounting system, or does it tie into some other?
It ties into everything. Google Analytics, our website.
Okay, Gecko. It hooks up to all of it.
It's just a connector. Yeah. All it does is take data from a bunch of systems and display it
on a phone.
On a phone or on a, you know, we have a lot of flat screens throughout the office that will just have metrics about
motivation.
The business. So,
yeah.
So for the people that can see it, I'll talk about it for people on the radio, but I have current visitors. There's 79 people on the website.
So there's 79 people on your website currently?
Right now.
Okay.
Right at this second.
Yeah.
And we've had as many as 870 on the website today. You know, at any one time, we've closed 70 deals today.
Okay.
You know, it shows me a graph of new subscriptions, you know, so far this month. We've spent $5,025 on Facebook advertising.
Is that today or?
That's today.
Okay.
Yep. That resulted in 20 same day sales from Facebook. So those deals that's about $20,000 worth of deals. In the last 7 days, I've had 124,900 unique visitors come to the website. So a lot of people.
And when it shows up in red like that, is that like below average type thing or below quota?
Yes, exactly.
I see you got green and red that's kind of indicate good and
exactly.
bad.
Exactly. So next to them, I have little percentages. So that traffic is up 12% compared to the previous 12 days. We've closed 2,103 deals so far this month, which is down 4.8% over last month, which means I should probably do.
What are you doing here on the? How do you decide to come on the Mark Haney podcast? You're wasting, come on, man. You need to be back at the analytics.
So, yeah, so we haven't done any promotions or anything this month. So we usually end every month up about 10 or 15% over the previous month. You know, I could go through all of them, but I can see most of the high level metrics of the business in real time.
The right tools that keeps you the decision maker engaged,
and I know when there's a problem. I can immediately same day see if traffic is down or if conversions, you know, slash sales, whatever you want to call it, are down. I'm able to have my finger on the pulse of the business at a level that is what you know you should really be at as a CEO. That way I know, like, what area do I need to zoom in and fix at any one time.
So let's talk about this customer journey. You come into the funnel, and eventually you buy some trifecta food, and then maybe you stop buying it. You go back into the funnel. You basically recirculate that person.
You go into a whole different funnel. So
this is like a master strategy of for every possible scenario with that customer in his journey.
Yep, and you start out with just one email automation, but eventually, you know, I think we have like 166 now or something like that. So there's all kind of, it's a big multi-headed dragon. If you think of someone like Apple's probably got 6,000 or 7,000 email automations. I mean, if you download an app off the App Store and you get a refund, and you know, then they're gonna, you know, you're gonna get these emails from whatever brand it is, and you're just put yourself in a different email automation for them.
So email is one component of a funnel.
A big one.
It's the big one. But what about like retargeting or something like that? They come into the funnel. Look, there's a lot of ways to attack that potential customer. Besides email, I mean, what are these other ones that are like probably most common to use?
I mean, retargeting is obviously a big one as well. People joke when they come to the Trifecta website, they're like, oh my God, you guys are everywhere.
Yeah.
And that's because we're retargeting them. All retargeting is you came to our website, whether it was through your phone or your laptop, and we dropped a pixel onto your browser, a little piece of code. Mm-hmm. And I can now follow you around the internet everywhere and show you ads, whether it's on Google Display, which allows me to reach most of the internet, or if it's on Facebook or Instagram. We're serving up a huge amount of ads at this point, something like 1.3 million ads an hour. So it's a tremendous amount of ads, but it allows us to, you know, anybody who's had interest in coming to Trifecta, there's a really high probability we're going to be able to get them to come back to the website and ultimately, you know, eventually convert.
So thinking about that, like, how do you decide? So you've spent a lot of money on, like, you guys have blown up and you had an enormous marketing spend, whether it be through these influencers or, you know, all the different ways that you, Facebook ads, you decide to spend money. I mean, how do you decide how much of your budget should go to growth versus obviously, you know, you could focus on being more profitable. You're very profitable, but you could have more of a focus there. And part of your focus is on top line growth.
It's a great question. So that comes down to some kind of core basic metrics in the business you're going to focus on. So one is, how much does it cost to get me a customer? My customer acquisition cost, or CAC. Mm-hmm. For me, it's about $104 or so.
Oh, wow.
Right now. Yeah, so it's reasonably expensive because of all the Facebook ads and stuff like that. But on average, we make $350 per customer.
That's the lifetime value of the customer?
Or is that
per year?
That's a gross profit.
Gross profit, lifetime,
average
gross
lifetime
profit.
Value. Yeah.
Okay.
So how long does it take
to get that though? Is that five years?
Six weeks.
Okay. So your lifetime value of a customer is taken within a 6 week.
Yep.
That's a 6 week snapshot. It's not 3 years or something.
No. If someone orders for 3 years, they spent probably $30,000 with us. Then all of a sudden there are those type of customers,
right. Okay,
but there
so
are
you're
also,
averaging it, yeah.
Yeah. There are also people who just order it because we did a promo and they quit the first week, you know, type thing. So the balance between,
so if you
those,
can keep him 6 weeks,
we make $1,000. Yeah. We make $1,000. That's our LTV, your lifetime value.
Okay.
Then our gross profit, average gross profit is $350, and our customer acquisition cost is about $100.
Okay.
So the delta between the $350 and the $100, that $250 is what I put in the bank to pay for payroll and this and that, and, you know, all the other stuff, rent, et cetera, on our offices.
Well, I'm kind of taking a little bit of a meandering path here because I'm curious as to, you know, some companies these days are, especially ones that are venture-backed, are not as focused on profitability because they got their next raise. And so, listen, this is just about user growth and just getting some top line there, but not as much about profitability. How does someone like you view that, right? You are venture-backed, but you're still profitable. So why did you decide to take that route where you're a little more conservative on that?
Well, I mean, a few reasons. I'm almost 40 now, so I'm a little more conservative than I used to be when I was younger. But it's definitely based on what your goals are as an entrepreneur. Mm. If you really want to take some bigger risks, you can have a burn rate, which is, you know, you're losing money every single month type thing. And ultimately, if you're in a space where you think you have a chance of being the market leader, someone like an Uber or a Facebook or whoever it is, you may want to spend that money to grow very big. And then when you're big, you can stop growing so incredibly fast, and all of a sudden you have this huge margin. Like, it used to drive me nuts when people would say, oh, you know, Twitter's super big, but they're not profitable. Well, Twitter was making, you know, billions of dollars a year. They weren't profitable because they were spending money as fast as they made it. And the greatest quote on that is from Jeff Bezos. It's one of his most famous quotes. Jeff Bezos from Amazon, richest man on earth. So he knows what he's talking about. He used to say, your margin is my opportunity. So other companies were focused on making that profit, and he was plowing that profit back into growth so that he could get bigger and bigger faster. Yeah. And now, obviously, the rest is history. Amazon is about 50% of all the e-commerce in the United States. Yeah. I mean, that's...
Well, you see that happening with Uber, too. They're taking a beating, right? They initially had an IPO, and it's, you know, the stock has gone down a little bit because they're still not profitable. Mm-hmm. Yet they are profitable in certain segments, right? I think their ride-sharing piece is profitable at some point when they once it's established in a certain market. But they're working on Uber this and Uber that. Speaking of that, they have Uber Foods too, don't they, or something?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They'll get food from a restaurant and deliver to your house. Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's not like what we do where we're like preparing a whole week's worth of food for you, but they'll go get you a Taco Bell or something like that.
It's interesting how that's a strategy. But you chose not to do that. Mm-hmm. Okay, you're 40. That sounds young to me. But like, are you setting up? What's the setup look like? I mean, I don't know if you can talk about what's the plan for you. You're on this rocket ship, mm-hmm. And I guess there's decisions on. Do you become the first unicorn in Sacramento, or mm-hmm. is there a different play there?
I mean, shoot, I'd love to be the first unicorn in Sacramento. That would obviously be amazing. But for us,
well, just keep going at your same trajectory. You'll get there.
Yeah, right. I mean, honestly, right now we're growing so fast that we're, you know, our full impact ARR is closing in on 9 figures, which is, mm-hmm. you know, big. It's not unicorn big.
But the value.
I got a whole nother zero to go to get to that point. But you know, ultimately, yes, the food space is so big that, you know, even if I can claw a percent out of, you know, Mike Teal over at Raley's and Safeway and Chipotle and all these other, you know, players of a few people making the Mark Haney decision and deciding to eat healthy, mm-hmm. You know, ultimately that's enough for me to build a very, very large business. Food in the United States is a multi-trillion-dollar industry. It's the largest industry in the entire country and worldwide. So, you know, for me, it really is a law of small numbers because everybody calls it TAM, not to be confused
total
with
addressable market.
Yeah. Not to be confused with Team Alpha Male. the total addressable market is so large that we feel like e-commerce food delivery is going to be a very big business.
Is there like a secular trend too? I'm not the only, like you and I do CrossFit. I have some bad habits, but I try to eat healthy most of the time. But I mean, that's a trend, right? You made the decision to go healthy early on. Was it because, was that a business decision mainly, or is there something driving that for you that's more personal?
Both. So it's something I personally started doing a few years ago, you know, really around the time we were launching Trifecta, because I educated myself on nutrition and said, hey, if I want a six pack, I need to eat meal prep. It's the only way to stay consistent, you know, because I'm so incredibly busy. So that was a big piece of it. If you look at Google Trends, meal prep has gone like whoosh, starting in 2014. All of a sudden, it is the super popular thing for people to do. The other piece of it is our company mission. Our company mission is dead simple: to help get America back into shape. You know, I've talked about this on previous shows, but we're at about 74% of adult males and 68% of adult females who are overweight or obese. It's 3/4 of the U.S. population, and that's now spread to worldwide. You know, China is about to have 400 million type 2 diabetics.
Well, there's so many choices of unhealthy food that tastes really good. It's kind of it's a tough thing. Like when you and I were kids, when I was a kid, I ate a lot of junk food too, but there really weren't as many choices, right? You had four different types of cereal or cookies. Now it's off the charts. The food is way better today than it used to be in terms of taste.
Totally.
So your competition is like enormous.
Yeah. And I mean, I grew up in the 80s and that was like boom time for fast food. So, you know, I was very fortunate that my parents were, you know, kind of old fashioned with like having a family dinner every night and all of that type of stuff. So I generally ate pretty healthy because I was lucky to have healthy parents who liked to home cook. But we still went to Taco Bell and Carl's Jr. and In-N-Out and stuff, you know, on a fairly regular basis, just because it was so popular in the 80s and 90s. That trend has really changed. You know, Coca-Cola is in a 10-year decline at this point. They've had 10 years of market share losses on their core product.
On the Coke,
Coke itself.
So they're trying to build out a more healthy drink.
Exactly. They're offerings. Pivoting into all, you know, they're buying up companies right and left to get out of the sugary soda area. You know, if you look at McDonald's website now and put it next to Whole Foods, they look almost identical.
Crazy.
McDonald's is like wood grain and green and salads and all this stuff. And it's McDonald's, yeah. You know, it's like, you know, the trend has just really fundamentally shifted that, you know, being healthy is mainly based on nutrition. You can't out exercise a bad diet, even with CrossFit. Yeah, you still have to eat healthy. And that's, you know, ultimately we just happen to be very on trend. And it's also a big part of our company mission.
What about being number one in the market, right? Your company goes up. I mean, I always think about the job of the CEO is to make his company more valuable to the shareholders. That's a big piece of what you're doing. And mm-hmm. being number one in the market makes you that much more valuable to your shareholders, right? And because if you've got certain advantages, I guess, and once you get to be number one in the market, it's like you can charge more and you've got other advantages. Mm-hmm. Are you number one yet, or what's the goal even after you get to be number one in a market?
In terms of total volume,
market share, you know.
Yeah. In terms of visibility and popularity, yes, we're the number one most recognizable brand in our space. In terms of total meal volume, we're currently number two.
Okay.
To another company who will go unnamed.
It's obviously not McDonald's.
Yeah, not McDonald's. But in the meal kit delivery space, or the meal fully prepared meal delivery space. They raised a huge amount of money, you know, over $100 million. But that is not who we're really targeting. Investors always compare us to, oh, you know, how are you doing against XYZ competitor? And I'm like, oh my God, think about how I'm doing against Raley's or McDonald's or Chipotle or any of these other myriad of food brands out there that we're taking a very small percentage of their business. When someone makes a decision to stop grocery shopping at Raley's and come buy, you know, food directly from us at Trifecta. And that's more where my head is at, is, you know, even local Raley's is a $4 billion a year company. There's so much market available that I'm less worried about competitors, but yes, obviously being the number one or the number two in a market gives you a greater amount of mind share, so that when people say, oh, you know, I'm thinking about doing a meal delivery service, you know, have you heard of any? They go, oh yeah, I heard of Trifecta. I saw it on Facebook. Mm-hmm. This celebrity eats it on Instagram, this, that, and the other thing.
Have you been tempted to, compromise the quality of the food, but the healthiness of the food? Because I could see, wow, if I mixed in an organic donut and gave it the tagline organic, I'm looking at an organic donut company right now, but you know, it would be not, I don't know how healthy it is, but it might not be as healthy, sure. But yet it sounds good.
Sure. So for us, it's more, it really is about the company mission. You know, we're not going to be able to successfully do that if we sell out and become McDonald's, you know, is really what it comes down to.
It makes me think, though, that you could maybe, it might be, your product might be a little more sticky if it had, a little more, addictive food.
Right? Totally. I mean, the combination of sugar, salt, and fat is like humans just literally can't resist it. So that's a big challenge of ours, is to try and make the food as tasty as possible, which I think in a lot of ways we've succeeded with, mm-hmm. Without giving in to, you know, really making it unhealthy for people. So it's the same with the packaging. I just flew out with our mutual good buddy, Tom Kandris, to Phoenix, to meet with a fully green packaging company. They have these fiber trays that are made out of paper fiber, essentially, that the way the, you know, I don't have to get into it on the show, but the way the chemistry works, they operate just like plastic, but then they break down in 180 mm-hmm. days. So they're not, you know, spending the next 500 years in the ocean. So a lot of that type of stuff that seems mission driven will ultimately perform better in the market. Customers trust Trifecta because I haven't given in to mm-hmm. putting the organic donut out there. I haven't given in to putting the sugar and the salt and the fat into the meals. You know, we're working to totally green the packaging and make it nothing but food and biodegradable products. And that ultimately gets us a whole lot more buzz than us, because consumers are smart. They do their research. They're looking at reviews and blog posts and, you know, all kinds of, you know, Instagram, everything to really research the brand before they spend their hard-earned money, you know, buying food from Trifecta. So it's very important for us to consistently make the right decision. And then for me as a leader, you know, I'm a big believer in, you know, ethical leadership, you know, making sure that I'm setting a good example for my team of, you know, choosing the ethical course, and they know that they can trust me as a leader because I'm making that, you know, that right decision for them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's something that I believe in from a number of different factors. And maybe the organic donuts, maybe they're maybe able to make them with protein powder or something like that. And ultimately, you know, we are releasing some protein baked goods as well. You know, there's ways to do it.
Okay.
If you work hard enough, you can do it. Do the right thing and still make a whole lot of money and help a lot of people in the process.
I love that quote. Okay, so I've meandered this conversation, and you know, I want to make sure we've exhausted the marketing component of our conversation. Mm-hmm. What did I miss as I steered us off course here? Is there anything else that you feel like is important for us to know as you get in the funnel and ultimately they convert at some point? But what else am I missing here that should be discussed?
I think people really thinking about iteration when it comes to the funnel. It's a project that you'll always be refining. Facebook is refining their funnel. Google is refining their funnel constantly to this day, forever. It's something it becomes the main project of the company. You know, how can we get the conversion rate percentage up? How can we get customer acquisition costs down? How can we increase lifetime value? When we started, our lifetime value was... our average lifetime value is about 4.3 weeks. Then it went to 4.6, 5, 5.2. Now it's at about 6.7. We're at almost 7 weeks. I use 6 as an easy number, but we're at almost 7 weeks. So if I can get that to 12 weeks, we're making twice as much money off every single customer. So it's really about those kind of incremental improvements in the business. And for you yourself and me myself as an entrepreneur, you know, I'm constantly reading a new book or, you know, listening to a new podcast, or, you know, I have certain podcasts that always give value. So I consistently listen to them, you know, over time, yours included. And that's really, I think, the core for any business and any entrepreneur is having that growth mindset to be constantly learning new information because the internet changes so fast. Like Facebook just hit their 10-year anniversary. Like that's crazy to think about. You know, the internet's not even 20 years old at this point. So there's that I would say is a big piece, iteration, and then using the resources, even the ones that I've thrown out here. Go to digitalmarketer.com, read the CVO article, read the email marketing machine, you know, educate yourself on the basics of building an inbound marketing funnel, and then go out and build the gosh darn thing. It's so hard for me not to cuss.
Hanging around Uriah too much.
I know, seriously. Yeah, go out and build the thing. And once you've built it, you'll know, because it will start converting on its own. And then at that point, you just move into iteration stage. You go, okay, what's the low-hanging fruit that I can improve in the funnel? Maybe people aren't converting as fast as they should, so I need to redesign the shopping cart. Maybe we're not getting enough traffic, so I need to focus on my Instagram or my blog post or whatever traffic source I've chosen. You know, that's when the fun starts, because the money's coming in and it's just you as the entrepreneur, you know, figuring out which step of the process needs the most work, and you zoom in and work on it and then go, okay, well now that's slightly better. You know, now our emails need to get improved, or our, you know, YouTube needs an upgrade, or we need a SEO guy to give us, you know, the best titles for our YouTube videos. Mm-hmm. I have all this amazing Mark Haney content, and if I had good titles for it, I'd be getting 100,000 monthly, you know, viewers on YouTube every single month. And
something as simple as titles. Yeah, it sounds simple, but it's important.
We talked a little bit about that earlier, you know, and I'll give people a quick nugget. Researching the titles of your blog posts and your interview questions prior to actually doing the interview. If you had, you know, let's say 10 titles, you could go through and say, you know, tell me about, you know, influencer marketing or something along those lines. And then the title of that is on YouTube is like the ultimate guide to influencer marketing featuring Greg Conley of Trifecta. Mm-hmm. And boom, now that for influencer marketing, that ranks number one or two or three on YouTube, and it's getting consistent evergreen traffic. And you can just break this interview into like 20 different videos. So educating yourself consistently, using the tools, you know, people like me throw out there, and then at that point, iterating, you know, on the process until you've got the funnel really refined, and you get to the point where you're making millions or tens of millions or hundreds of millions, and then that's when it gets really fun because you have specialists in every area improving the funnel.
I have
a woman who just writes email automations all day. I have a woman that just does Instagram posts all day.
How many marketing people you got?
We have 14 marketing
14 people in-house marketing.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's, you know, people doing
video
production.
Plus you're a marketing guy at heart.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But, you know, we have people doing blog posts, video production, you know, all of the different areas. Yeah. And we're just a marketing engine now. And, you know, to be candid, in 2019, you're in two businesses. You're in whatever your core business is and you're selling, and you're a marketing and media house. Mm-hmm. If you're not, you're... You know, I tell people, if you're not selling on the internet, you're not even in the game. That's where all of the business is happening now. That's the playing field now.
Well, you mentioned that, certain channels that we might market on could go away or change, and, you know, we have to figure out a new
yep.
thing. But one of the things that I think has always been around, and I'm invested into a company called Grin, which I think you are on the advisory board. You're invested in there too, I guess.
Yep.
So, but thinking about it, it's all about influencer marketing, right? So influencer marketing, I can't imagine that ever going away. So to get your arms wrapped around utilizing, so you have 14 marketing people, but you have how many influencer marketers that also work for you in a kind of indirect way?
We have 230.
Okay.
So it's a huge amount of influencers, and most of them we're just providing them with free food. If they're like a big celebrity, we'll give them some money as well. But we make sure we've like aligned our economics incentives. So we have a really robust affiliate program as well, where if they promote Trifecta and sell a bunch of it, we're giving them a profit share out the back door of, you know, whatever they sold.
Okay.
And it's
give
all
a piece of the action.
Yeah. It's all tracked and it all happens on the internet.
Yeah. And that product Grin that I was talking about, it's actually like a CRM where you can meet the influencers. It's a way to, you know, it's a marketplace where you can meet the influencers and come up with these agreements. And it's not necessarily the super famous. It could be the guy that's a great skateboarder that nobody knows about
100%.
In my generation.
Yeah, so Grin allows us to like track what's going on with a lot of the influencers.
Do you use it yourself?
Yeah, we use it ourselves. Yeah, and it gives us visibility into all their posts. You know, how much media value we're getting from their posts. They're going to be releasing, you know, an affiliate platform for it as well, so we'll be able to track the money flow. They have a bunch of reports that we can run with it. You know, showing us different metrics on the influencers, etc. They have the ability for us to roll out content to the influencers too, because you think that many influencers, they need ideas. You know, they can't do an abs post with a food, you know, picture again and again and again. They have to, we have to constantly be ideating. Yeah. So I have a partner manager named Sierra, and her whole job is to constantly come up with ideas to be giving to all these influencers all day, every day.
Wow.
So it becomes a full-time project, but you know, we can reach 250.
That seems like it'd be a fun job hanging, you know, having a relationship with all these celebrities and famous people. And you know, her name's Sierra.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sierra gets to interact with these people and help them come up with creative ideas on not embarrassing themselves, I guess, because, you know, they've got to put themselves out there as a celebrity.
Yep, exactly. So it's just a constant process of getting them new content, getting them new ideas. Sometimes it's us paying for a camera crew to shoot a YouTube video for them, you know, which may cost us a couple $1,000 for a shoot. We have studios all over the country that I pay for now that, you know, influencers can go into and film like a, you know, a cooking video or something like that, talking about their nutrition, or a workout video because there's gym equipment, et cetera. So we're constantly creating content, to go back to the content piece, because we know that content, if I have an influencer who has 2 million followers on his, or 2 million subscribers on his YouTube, if he posts a video, it's getting a couple hundred thousand views for sure. So if I have to pay $2,000 to create that video, I'm going to make way more than that $2,000 back off of those 200,000 views.
Yeah. Okay, so just, you know, I want you to have a chance to say whatever you want on the show. You could even drop another F-bomb if you want to. But I mean, but
you ready,
also,
Brian?
But I don't want. I've already kept you here like all day, so I want to be somewhat respectful of. No, I want to be very respectful of your schedule and your time. But I. You know, you talk about Facebook. 10 years, look what they did. They're sort of like almost like what we might consider a best case scenario for a business today, or Amazon. These are like people that have really gained market share fast. They didn't focus on profitability at the beginning, but yet they're now monetizing in a big way. Mm-hmm. So thinking about Trifecta, and you pull out the crystal ball. You're 4 years in. In six more years, you just moved into this great new space downtown next to the arena. I mean, you've made such strides in 4 years, but like pulling out the crystal ball, I mean, paint a picture for us of what you're going to look like in 10 years.
I'm in 10 years.
Excuse me, six years. 10 year anniversary. You and I are toasting to your success. What's it, paint a picture for me.
So I would guess we've either IPO'd or gotten acquired or something at that point, and I've fired myself. It's really what's probably happened. But I usually talk in like a year out or 2 years out because we've grown so fast. So if we kept doubling in size by the end of 2021, we'd be doing $500 million a year, which is seems like monopoly money at this point. So we would IPO or, you know, something along those lines, and we probably have, in this office in NorCal, we'd probably have 250 people, maybe 700 to 1,000 in the kitchen in LA. So it'd be a huge team, and hopefully we're making major inroads into healthcare, which is, you know, kind of the, you know, the 200-pound gorilla opportunity for us. That's, especially with Medicare, you know, all the money us as taxpayers are spending on it at this point. If we fed the elderly on Medicare's dime, it would save Medicare billions of dollars, preventing those people from making return trips to the hospital because they're malnourished or they're overweight or, you know, whatever the situation is. So there's healthcare is where I see us.
Well, that's
interesting
because as you paint out that growth, you know, the $500 million is within, you know, within eyesight in sales. But a lot of companies run into the law of big numbers, right? Where you just get to a point where it's like, I have a hard time really growing because, for a variety of reasons, we have growing pains and we can't get out of our own way, but you guys just have a marketing engine. There's almost no limit, right? If you start talking about, you know, things like the healthcare crisis and all these other things, it's like, the industry's so big.
Yeah. I mean, the industry, exactly. The total addressable market is so massive that even if we reached $1 billion, which, you know, knock on wood, we eventually will, we're still just a little minnow in the giant ocean of food. You know, you got to think McDonald's is doing $1 billion every like 12 or so days. So it's just such a massive, massive market that the potential is absolutely enormous. You know, for me personally, I don't know if I would want to run a public company. That's a lot of, stress and fame and visibility. I'd probably bring in someone like Eric Schmidt from Google, you know, someone that could be a professional CEO, and I can be like the chief creative officer or something like that, where I go around and do the fun projects or something like that. But yeah, I mean, ultimately, because of the marketing model, the inbound marketing funnel, yes, scalability is not a problem for us. That's the big advantage of building based on marketing, is you can continue to scale incredibly quickly. And you know, at that point, you're just pulling certain levers that result in different metrics changing. And I watch the metrics, as I showed you guys, all day, every day. So it's something that, I feel like the sky's the limit, and we really want to make a huge impact. So we're going to have to get well beyond a billion to get America back into shape. So we got a long ways to go, but, you know, I feel like I have more than a few good years left.
Well, this is why I love entrepreneurship, is being around people like you. I'm around you, and I come away more inspired every time. I think, again, I thank you for our friendship. I love what we're doing together in EO, what you're doing in Trifecta, and the Sacramento community, too. I mean, it's like when guys like you begin to really have the success, the jobs you've created, and what happens, it's sort of... I guess it's infectious in a way. So thank you very much for everything, for being so transparent today on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. No, what you do, I think, is amazing. And that's a big personal goal of mine, is to really give back to the community. And I think entrepreneurship is one of the most impactful ways to do it. And that's why I always try and, like you said, give a little more than I can get with all the entrepreneurs I interact with, because the better they do, the better the whole community does, because they're out there creating jobs and, you know, bettering people's lives. So yeah, appreciate what you do more than you know, and, you know, happy to try and make a, you know, a little incremental contribution to it.
Well, thank you. And it's like very motivational. Thanks, man.
Yeah, appreciate absolutely. Yeah. Thank you guys for tuning in.